Okay, well, I'm very lucky. I'm here now in the press room with a very famous face, a lovely lady called Victoria Stilwell, who perhaps is best known in the UK for It's Me or the Dog, which was one of the first dog training programmes that I really enjoyed years ago, and is now on our screens on a Sunday evening with Dogs Might Fly on Sky One. So Victoria's at Crufts, and I'm here to find out a little bit more about why she's here. So first of all, hello.
Hello, it's great to be here.
Thank you. So can you tell us a little bit about why you're at Crufts today?
I love Crufts, and I've been here many years. Actually, I filmed here one time with the BBC, then I filmed here twice with It's Me or the Dog. Then now I filmed last year with Channel 4. Now I'm here again launching my academy, my dog training academy here in the UK. And I love Crufts because, you know, even though I'm not much of a dog show person, I love everything else around it. I love the education that people are getting, the celebration of dogs, all kinds of dogs. And I love all the activities that, you know, you can do with dogs and that showcased the people. It's kind of a community getting together. It's where I meet all my friends. It's where we, I know the police as well, and I work with K9 in the US now. And so to see my friends at the West Midlands Police here as well and see their display, just the amazing things that dogs can do. That's why I love Crufts.
Yeah, it is a great celebration. And I think what I would like to know about, and I would hope that people who are listening to this would like to know about, is more about the academy and Victoria Stilwell Positively Dog Training. I think it's really important to share the reasons for that with everybody. So if you could tell us a little bit about, first of all, why you started the Positively Dog Training, that would be great.
Yeah. Well, Positively was really set up as the antidote to any of the traditional base, more punitive training out there. We wanted to be able to give out great advice to anybody who needed it. And because certain other media has sort of really put dog training back 30 years, we wanted to make sure that people still had great access to the right kind of the latest information. So that's why Positively was born. And then, of course, we wanted to be able to spread the wealth of knowledge via, of course, I had the television show with It's Me or the Dog, but with boots on the ground. So we want to have like-minded people that we could all sort of be a team and train under the same umbrella. And that's where my Victoria Stilwell Positively Dog Trainers come in. They're really hand-selected, they're hand-picked. It's hard to become a VSPDT, but they are the best of the best, and they're very good at what they do, and they're good people, you know, people, as well as dog people. And so they have a lot of great skills. And so, and that's been going really well. We have a number here in England. We have quite a large number in the United States where I live full-time. And then, of course, the academy. I wanted to be able to give people a really well-rounded, thorough educational experience if they wanted to become a trainer. So get somebody who's never trained before and give them a course where they have a lot of theory, a lot of practical information, the ability to work practically with dogs, and to have business and marketing skills, to market themselves on social media, to understand how to talk to somebody, and also to be very skilled working with dogs. So the VS Academy starts in the UK in October.
That's really exciting news, and I'm sure you're going to get a lot of take up for that. And you're also on the lookout for mentors, aren't you, for that, which I have to say I am going to have a go at applying for. But can you explain a little bit more about the mentor's role?
Yes. Well, we want our course to be very practical. So we're going to have, you know, in sessions, we have people, all our students come into like a 5-day session first, and then they go away for 60 days to where they live, and they work with a mentor. They have to have a certain amount of hours working with a mentor, and this is somebody in the industry. It doesn't have to be a Victoria Stilwell Positively Dog Trainer, just somebody who has the same philosophy, that's very good at what they do, so that that person can shadow, can watch, can learn by going either do private sessions or classes, and they have to have a certain amount of hours in the shelter as well. Then they come back for another 8-day session intensive with me and some other faculty of learning, and then they go away again for 90 days where they have more work with their mentor, and at the end of that they take an exam. So it really is thorough, because we want to turn out people who are really, really skilled and knowledgeable.
No, that's great. And I think what strikes me about it is the grounding, not just the people skills and the practical skills, which are obviously very important, but I know you are a big supporter of basing training techniques in science and the, you know, learning theory. Can you explain sort of why it is so important for people to understand that, particularly when they're picking a trainer. In the UK, we know it's not a regulated industry. That poses its problems. What advice would you offer people looking for classes?
Right. If anybody is looking to go to a class or is looking for a private trainer, there's a couple of buzzwords you look for. Somebody says, I'm going to teach you to be your dog's pack leader, run away. Somebody says, well, I'm going to put a prong collar or a shock collar or a choke collar on your dog, run away. If somebody says, well, you know what, the way you become, you know, you can become the alpha or top dog of your dog is by lying your dog on its side when it misbehaves and dominating your dog into calm submission, run away. These are all buzzwords that you've got to look for. What you need to ask the person who you either going to go to their class or are going to come and work with you is, if everyone can positively reinforce a dog for good behavior, but how do you deal with behavior you don't like? What do you do for that? And if somebody uses any kind of pain or physical punishment, that they're not the trainer for you. But if somebody says, well, actually, I redirect onto positive behavior, or I interrupt behavior and then negative behavior and we do something different, or actually, you know what? I set the dog up for success by teaching the dog how to do a different behavior in the situation. Or I might use a no reward marker and remove the food for a second. Or I might take the dog out for a calm down period. These are all really important ways of telling the dog, we actually don't like that behavior, but so as not to instill fear or pain on the dog. That's really important. So somebody's going to positively reinforce your dog. Really, I think the most important thing is concentrate on the bond between dog and owner. Because the bond comes before anything. You got a good bond with your dog's going to listen to you.
I couldn't agree more. It's one of the things, actually, that is my pet subject, no pun intended, on building a bond with your dog. And since having had two puppies within about 18 months, to me, the most important thing is getting that bond right first, before you start worrying about even, not necessarily the basics, but worrying about, are they sitting on cue? Are they doing this on cue? Because I just, to all my clients in my puppy classes, play is so important, I think. And I think it's very undervalued and underrated with young dogs. Do you find the same in the States? Do you find differences between the States and the UK for training?
I do. I feel like England is much further advanced than the US. In the US, the prong collars are standard. They're used by everybody. Nobody really realizes what pain they cause or what discomfort they cause. It's very easy to get a prong collar. We are trying to spread information about that's not a good thing to use on your dog, but it seems like at least Britain is further ahead. In just their whole animal awareness anyway, they're further ahead. I do also think that in Britain, dogs have more freedom. Our leash laws in the United States are very strict, so it means that we have a lot of leash reactivity because the dogs can't be off-lead. Whereas here, we've got so much green space, dogs are allowed to be off-lead a little bit more, and that might cause its own problems, but it seems to be dogs a little bit more adjusted. Still, you've got a lot of reactivity, but a little bit more adjusted. And that's what I would say are the major differences that I've seen.
Okay. No, that's great. I mean, in America, I know there are dog parks, which we don't really get in the UK. When I was across in America and chatting to some American trainers, they were amazed. They thought everywhere had dog parks. And obviously they bring their own problems too in America with, so I understand, people who just come in, have a cup of coffee, let their dogs go off lead.
Yes, that's a really big problem. And a lot of these dog parks are quite enclosed, so the dogs can't escape. And people think, I'll bring my dog in and have some fun, and then the dog's cowering in the corner or getting chased and bullied by another dog. I mean, and that is just not good. So dog parks do pose their own problems.
Okay, and how do you think we can help owners understand what their dogs are telling them a little bit more? Because I think as humans, we're pretty lousy at reading dog body language.
It's interesting you say that, because I've just finished writing my fourth book, and it's coming out in the States in September. And we should just be close to be doing a deal with the UK so that the book comes out the same time here in the UK. And it's called The Secret Language of Dogs. So it's all about dog body language, with amazing photographs, amazing illustrations, and a lot of the latest science about dog behavior. So you can read that and find out more. But yeah, people need to be better understanding their dogs.
Yeah, I often say to clients, dogs speak very well. It's just a different language, and we just aren't tuned in to picking up the slightest signs. That probably leads us on quite nicely to a subject that I know is really dear to your heart, which is dog bite prevention. now this year in the UK. I think it's the second conference, is that right? Third. All right, sorry, my apologies. So it's June this year. Yeah. It's the third dog bite prevention conference, the 11th and 12th yes. of June at Lincoln University, which is just down the road from me. Can you tell people a little bit more about that and whether it's open to just general members of public, dog owners or trainers?
It's really open to anybody. And it's all to do with dog bite prevention, but it's also about behaviour as well. So we have some of the best speakers in the world coming: Chirag Patel, Sarah Fisher. We have Adam McClosey, who is stunning. Kamel Fernandez. We have myself, Joe Pay. We have some wonderful speakers, and it's been very successful year after year because we don't just focus on how to prevent dog bites, but that is really important. It's an important part of it. Every year in the US we have Dog Bite Prevention Week, and we had Dog Bite Prevention Week here in the UK last year, which is hopefully going to be the same week as we had it the year before. But it's a really good way of raising awareness about how to be safe around dogs, especially for children.
You've hit the nail on the head there. It is really key, I think, for children in particular, and for the caregivers for children and caregivers for the dogs, to actually understand how to keep themselves safe. It comes back to the dog body language that we were talking about and the whole ream of other things. So where can people find out more about the conference?
If you go to my website, positively.com, and then we have positively.com/DBC, Dog Bite Conference, and you should find out more about it by there. But just go to Positively and go to events and you'll find it there.
That's great. Now, I know you have a couple of dogs of your own, and they're across in the States at the moment. Can you tell people a little about your own dogs and their personalities?
Well, Sadie I got when she was 5 years old. She belonged to an elderly lady who had passed away. And she'd never really been out. She was very, very, very fat. She came to me and I fell in love with her immediately. She slimmed down a lot and she got lots of exercise. But because she hadn't been really socialized, she was quite dog reactive. So I worked with her a lot on that. And then 3 years ago, I wanted to get what I called a bomb-proof dog. So a dog that I could take onto shows and, you know, demonstrate them. And I went to the shelter because I'm a big rescue advocate. And I thought, well, I'm going to get a confident dog. Well, I saw the spy, this little chihuahua in the corner curled up and not socializing with anybody. And my heart, I fell in love with her. So, of course, I got probably the most damaged dog I possibly could get. But Jasmine joined us. And the one thing that she adored was my daughter. Their bond is just unbreakable. And so I've worked very hard with her to introduce her to life. This is a dog that was kept in a cardboard box for the first six months of her life.
Goodness, and that has such an impact as well on a dog's early development. We know that. I mean, that's in one respect not too dissimilar to racing greyhounds, who are quite institutionalised, and that's a subject that's really dear to my heart. And they almost have to, they understand, obviously they learn, but it's learning to learn to live in a human world.
It is, it really is. And I think for Jasmine's previous owners, They'd sectioned her away, as it were, because they didn't want her toileting everywhere. But because of that, her development, I mean, she really didn't have that socialization when she was younger. So consequently, she was scared of everything. Never seen a car, never been inside a car. Never walked on a street, never seen another human being. It was major, but I really feel like I've worked hard with her to get her to a point where she's now pretty confident.
Well, I think that's great. And again, I keep saying there's those hitting those nails on the head moment, but you have somebody up there. You have to work hard. You know, dogs don't come pre-programmed and with a manual that says, present a piece of cheese and dog will do X, unlike a washing machine. And I think people tend to forget that often when it comes to training. But again, talking about training, really interesting program that's on at the moment on Skyrom, Dogs Might Fly. For those people who may not get Sky or who may want to watch it on Now TV, can you tell us a little bit about the program, please?
Oh, it's probably one of the most incredible things we've ever done. It's this wonderful production company called Oxford Scientific Films. And Caroline Hawkins is this amazing producer, and she created Meerkat Manor, which was very successful here in the UK and in the States, around the world actually. But she came up with the idea, you know, dogs do amazing things. They can drive cars. This wonderful trainer down in New Zealand, Mark Betty, had trained dogs to drive cars. So she thought, well, why don't we train a dog to fly a plane? And so the idea of Dogs Might Fly was born. The premise is we went around, myself and two other experts, Charlotte Wilde, who is a film TV dog trainer, wonderful woman, and Adam Miklosi, who is a cognitive scientist from Budapest, Hungary, and myself, we went around the country and we went to lots of different rescues, we picked 12 dogs. And those 12 dogs we brought down to a beautiful country house in the south of England, and for 10 weeks, and we had wonderful trainers work with them, and we were the experts, and we took them through various challenges and tests to find out how they thought, how they felt, how they operated. And from those, we chose 3 to go on to flight school. And you have to watch what happens.
Oh, I was hoping you might give us a little hint or a giveaway there, because I know people would love to know whether they will end up flying. I mean, that's amazing, and I can't thank you enough for taking time out to speak to us. If I could ask 2 things, I think. One, what would be the best bit of advice that you could give to a new time dog owner or first time dog owner? And 2, because you split your time between the US and the UK, what do you miss most when you're in either country?
Okay, so first of all, first time dog owner, I would say do your research. Really think with your head and not just your heart. Really, if a dog could sit down and interview you, what kind of person would you be for that dog? Going to be high energy? Are you low energy? What is your life like? Do you have time? Ask yourself these questions and then find a dog that will fit into your lifestyle and whose lifestyle you will fit into too. That's very important. It's got to be a two-way thing. Secondly, traveling a lot's hard. You're away from your family. I have a little girl. She's 11 years old. Miss it like anything. My husband and I have been very used to being away from each other for years and years when I'm filming, and he used to be an actor, So I think that's what I find hardest, is being away from family.
Yeah, I can imagine. Is there, just to sort of end the interview on quite a light note, I mean, you can buy sort of American products in the UK and UK products in America, but is there anything in particular that you miss from home? Because obviously the UK was your home, and it is still to an extent. Because see, for those who can't see, Victoria is nodding furiously here. So let's find out what Victoria really misses about the UK.
British chocolate. I can tell you, the Americans, God bless them, do not know how to make chocolate. There's a certain company out there, it's very famous, everybody seems to like it, but actually, to a British person, and it's not just me, it just tastes horrible. So it's British chocolate. There are certain stores that will do different chocolate, but nobody actually, my favorite chocolate, which I probably shouldn't say, it's because I don't want to advertise them, but they try and make it in the US and it's not the same. But there's nothing like British chocolate. So when I come over here, and I'm on my stand right now, which is in Hall 4, stand 56, if you guys come. But I'm on my stand right now. So my trainers give me all this chocolate. So now I'm just full of British chocolate. But that's what I miss.
Okay. And that's your positive reinforcement, isn't it, really, at the end of the day, then, for being at Crufts, not only meeting people, spreading the word about positive reinforcement in dog training, but at the end of the day, you're getting your favourite chocolate.
I love it. So Crufts is great. Crufts is great for me in many different ways.
Victoria, thank you so much. I really do appreciate your time with us. Thank you.